From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to Washington Watch. Coming up on this Thursday edition, it did not take China long to begin choking off pro-democracy voices in Hong Kong after the passage of the national security law for Hong Kong. Lawmakers on Capitol here in the United States are responding with a number of bills designed to create economic pressure on China. Tennessee Congressman Mark Green joins us in just a moment. And although a majority of the Senate, the Supreme Court, said that the regulations placed on abortion clinics in Louisiana were unnecessary, that's not what many in the medical field are saying. In fact, Congressman Roger Marshall, a physician, a physician who has delivered nearly 5,000 babies, has a differing opinion, and he joins me later here on Washington Watch. Also, this past weekend, demonstrators here in D.C. set up a guillotine in front of Amazon CEO Jeff Bezos, his D.C. home, with flyers saying, quote, "End the abuse and profiteering, abolish the police, the prisons, and Amazon." You know, dozens, if not hundreds, of smaller mom-and-pop businesses have fallen victim to the cancel culture crowd for one reason or another. How should Christians be responding? David Clawson joins me for that conversation later here on Washington Watch. And more troubling news out of Turkey, as Erdogan's increasingly Islamist government is growing more and more hostile and intolerant toward religious freedom. Leila Gilbert, Senior Fellow for International Religious Freedom here at the Family Research Council, joins me with more information. The website, TonyPerkins.com, if you're on Twitter or Parler, for that matter, it's at T. Perkins. Hey, let me remind you of our Bible reading plan. We're 6 months into it, but not to worry if you're just starting. Great time to start. We just started the book of Psalms. And this has been so dynamic, not only for our team here in Washington as we do this as a team, but for our families to read through the Word of God together. And it's broken down into 15, 20-minute max reading segments each day. There's some discussion questions that follow on Sunday, so you can discuss this as a family, as a small group. It's a great tool, and it's powerful, and it's so timely as we see what's unfolding in our country. You can find out more about it. Go to TonyPerkins.com. We've got a link there. It's free. You can download the reading program, and I would encourage you to do so. Hong Kong has long been a beacon of hope for freedom in Southeast Asia for decades. And unfortunately, the communist Chinese regime continues to tighten its grip around Hong Kong, even though they were supposed to have 50 years of one country, two systems. 23 years into this treaty, they appear to have breached it once and for all with a national security law, which was adopted earlier this week. Members of Congress here in the United States have been responding to the various crises coming out of China, whether it's the coronavirus and their lack of transparency on that, or now they're clamping down on democracy and freedom in Hong Kong. Joining me now to talk about these efforts is an author of several of the measures, Congressman Mark Green. He represents the 7th Congressional District of Tennessee. He is a decorated Army veteran, and he serves on the House Committee on Homeland Security as well as the Subcommittee on National Security. Congressman Green, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Well, hey, Tony. Thanks for having me on.
Disturbing, I would say, of what we see happening in Hong Kong this week as the communists from China begin to clamp down on those that have been speaking out for democracy and freedom.
Yeah, absolutely. You look at the implementation of this new rule, which basically gives them the same powers of the state they have in China, in Hong Kong. And that is basically, if there's dissent, it can be titled as treason, and they can be executed with no due process. I mean, it is absurd what they they're trying to do. They're violating the treaty that they had. Fascinating today. I don't know if you saw that, but UK just granted 3 million of them citizenship.
And that's significant. A population of about 7 million. This is when combined with the other activities of China or lack thereof in terms of their transparency with the coronavirus and how they set on that. And as a result, literally hundreds of thousands of people around the world have died. Members of Congress here have been working on a number of measures. You've been working on a number of these measures to hold China accountable. And from my perspective, as I see this coming from both sides of the aisle, I'm of the persuasion that we may actually see something happen here.
There is certainly a growing chorus in the Congress that is not just Republicans. We've got some bipartisan support here for doing something. Very clearly, China lied and Americans died. And there are estimates, had they spoken as early as 3 weeks prior, then when they did, we could have saved 96% of the deaths. So it's a huge amount of Americans that died because they failed to say anything on the COVID. What it's pointed out to us is that we got to make changes in things like our supply chains for PPE and medicines. We got to watch our national security assets because they're using the economic downturn to buy up all these companies that impact our national security. We got to figure out all the things that Americans are doing to help the Chinese and blunt it where we can.
As you said, this is an opportunity. Congress is focusing on this. Many members of Congress focusing on this. I mean, there's so many different aspects, and that's why you actually have, I think, about four different bills addressing different aspects. Share with our listeners kind of what's at top of your list when it comes to China and correcting the situation that got us into this position.
Sure. I think our number one issue is the manufacturing piece. And so I've got a bill that will actually allow companies who move their manufacturing from China back to the United States to expense that in year one, the entire cost of the move. That's one of my bills. And I think it's probably the number one issue. We've got a lot of other issues, though, but that's probably the most important. One, it'll create jobs back home. Two, it makes us less dependent, especially in those areas like pharmaceutical precursors and PPE. So that's one of them.
And that was one of our big issues when the pandemic began to spread, is that it took us a while to get access to the personal protective equipment because it was being manufactured in China. Of course, you add to that the pharmaceutical aspect and how many of the elements are also created there in China.
Yeah, so it's the PPE issue is particularly enlightening because what China did in January and February was essentially take PPE from all over the world, and much of it was donated. And Italy donated millions of dollars of PPE to China, and then when they needed it, China sold it back to them. And in the case of the United States, China came up with all these reasons why it couldn't be shipped to us. So we sent them $30-something billion worth of PPE in January and February, and then they turned around and wouldn't ship us any when we hit our peak. So this relationship, they are not a friend, and it's time that all of Americans recognize that.
What would be next in terms of your priorities as we deal with China?
I think the next thing is to look at, we gave money to this Wuhan laboratory. We're discovering that American aid dollars went to this Wuhan laboratory. What other American agencies have been giving money to China? So my latest bill is basically requiring all agencies of the federal government to report to Congress exactly when any financial aid, any American dollars are spent either for China or for an agency of China. So that's a really exciting one. Again, something that could be easily passed because all we're asking for is an accounting. And I think the Democrats are going to like that bill.
The overwhelming evidence that China has acted in almost in a hostile way, certainly indifferent toward American interest and global interest. Will the pressure be there? to get something across the line, a bipartisan measure that is significant and that does hold China accountable?
The only barrier is politics, Tony, and that's a big barrier because right now no one on the left wants to give Donald Trump a win. And they by default then don't want to give Republicans a win, especially in the House where Pelosi is doing everything she can to maintain power. So that's the barrier. So if we want to be hard or tough on China, that's something that the president is his theme. So if we go out there and are tough on China, they're going to make it look like, or we will, you know, others might make it look like they're supporting the president, I guess is what I'm trying to say. So they may push back just because of that. I mean, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer were very anti-China. And now you don't hear any of that from them because Trump is. So that political dynamic could interrupt the potential for some bipartisan legislation. That's what we have to overcome.
That's a shame. I think this is the one moment in time in the last two decades where we can recalibrate and reset the relationship with China. We have someone in the White House who has the determination to do it. We have the motivation to do it because of all that has unfolded. And I think there is the support across the country to do it. And the only thing missing would be the political will here in Washington, D.C.
Yeah, and we've seen that political will, that dichotomy I just described, railroad really good bipartisan legislation, sidetrack or whatever the right term is. For example, good legislation to save rural hospitals from closing can't get heard in Congress because the majority party doesn't want to give the minority party a win.
Well, that's tragic for the American people that it's more about politics and parties than it is the people and the future of the country. Congressman,
that's where we are.
Congressman Mark Green, I want to thank you for taking time out to join us today. And we want to continue to track these issues as it pertains to China. And so we want to follow back up with you here in the not-too-distant future to see if these measures are, in fact, moving forward. So thanks for your leadership
Sounds
on this
great,
front.
Tony. Well, thank you very much. Thanks for having me on the show. Always a pleasure.
All right. Congressman Mark Green of Tennessee. To find out more about the measures that he is advocating as it pertains to China and our relationship, you can go to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links over. All right. As I mentioned at the top of the program, this past Monday, the Supreme Court handing down a decision on June Medical, Russo, they changed the name of the case. It pertains to abortion clinic regulation acts in Louisiana. And I was a part of the first iteration of that law nearly 20 years ago. Well, the court struck it down. In part, a majority of the justices said it wasn't needed. The state doesn't need to regulate the abortion clinics to this extent. Well, our next guest says not so fast. In fact, many of the medical community say there is a need for the well-being of women. Dr. Roger Marshall, congressman from Kansas, who has delivered about 5,000 babies, joins us next with his perspective on the importance of laws holding abortionists accountable. That's next here on Washington Watch. Don't go away. Lots more to come. Masculinity in America has never been under attack the way it is today. We've reached the point where the term itself is considered toxic or offensive to many. The consistent message in our nation is that masculinity by nature is bad and is the root cause of many of the problems plaguing our society. From his experience as a military combat officer and ordained minister of the gospel, Lieutenant General William Boykin has seen and dealt with firsthand the breakdown of leadership in our nation by the lack of godly men living lives of biblical purpose. In his latest book, Man to Man, Rediscovering Masculinity in a Challenging World, he addresses the essential elements of manhood as a provider, an instructor, a defender, a battle buddy, and a chaplain, and explains how to personally develop these traits and pass them to the next generation. Get your copy today of Man to Man, wherever books are sold.
Absent fathers, distracted fathers, and angry fathers have created a vacuum of the soul in the lives of many children. Pornography is epidemic, affecting the male brain, isolating his heart, and degrading women who long to be cherished. Confusion and even skepticism about marriage run rampant, especially in our younger generations. Selfishness among men has led to broken homes and a trail littered with broken hearts, including their own. Where can you turn to find the solutions to these problems? Leadership in Love, A Tale of Two Fathers, is a new publication from Family Research Council that takes a look at two men, Joshua and the father of the prodigal son, as strong examples of leadership and love. It also weaves in an understanding of attachment science to underscore the needs of children, which need to be met to become emotionally healthy and spiritually strong. Visit frc.org/fathers to learn more.
In today's culture, it can be difficult for men to navigate what it means to be a man and to find clear models of masculinity and manhood. There are many competing ideas out there and even confusion around the basic concepts of gender and sex. Where can boys, young men, husbands, and fathers find a model of manhood, leadership, and strength in today's culture of confusion? This is Tony Perkins inviting you to join me at a Stand Courageous Men's Conference led by men who are seasoned, compassionate leaders who understand the issues of the day. These issues will invest in unpacking our role as defenders, providers, instructors, and battle buddies so that men can have generational influence as a chaplain inside and outside the home. Join us at one of our upcoming events in Texas, Louisiana, Florida, or Virginia. Learn more about Stand Courageous and find an event near you at StandCourageous.com. That's StandCourageous.com. StandCourageous.com. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter or the new Parler, it's at T Perkins. All right, as we were talking about going into the break, the Supreme Court on Monday handing down a decision out of a case involving a case in Louisiana. It was the Abortion Clinic Regulation Act, which required that abortionists have admitting privileges at nearby hospitals. Now, one of the justices in his dissent got it right. Gorsuch, which he got it wrong last week, but this one he got right. And that was, he said, look, this is common sense. If you require a doctor to fall under the guidelines, it's that does LASIK surgery or does colonoscopies, any type of ambulatory surgical center has to be regulated. And the doctors having admitting privileges in case there's an emergency. And I authored the first law. I brought the abortion clinics that were unregulated into this existing structure of regulation. Well, it's had a couple of iterations since then, and one requiring admitting privileges within a certain distance of the abortion clinic, again, for valid reasons. But a majority of the court said no. It makes no sense. It's unnecessary, and it's an infringement upon this so-called constitutional right of abortion. Joining me now to talk more about this and bring his expertise to the conversation is Congressman Roger Marshall, who's also a doctor. He represents Kansas' 1st Congressional District and has served as an OBGYN for nearly 25 years. And if I recall correctly, he's delivered about 5,000 babies. Dr. Marshall, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony, thanks for having me on to talk about this very, very important topic. And as an obstetrician, my heart is just breaking. What my concern over this is the health and safety standards for women. Women are going to die because of the Supreme Court thinking they know more about health care than local folks do. What your listeners need to know that those abortion procedures, now they're all wrong. You and I agree they're all wrong. But these abortions done after 18 weeks, and even after 16 weeks, have a bigger risk of complication than a normal delivery, even in a C-section. That women bleed to death from these. It's one of the largest causes of deaths related to pregnancy. And that it is the common sense part of this is, if you're going to call me into the emergency room to take care of this woman, forgive me for being graphic, but is literally bleeding to death from your procedure, while I'm putting her to sleep, the standard would be that you would have privileges to get her admitted. And as I'm getting ready to save her life, maybe you could give me some clues what you did and what instruments you used, all those things. And you know, like you said, dentists do procedures in their offices, but they have admitting privileges in hospitals, podiatrists, all those things, so that they can admit the patient when there is a complication and help take care of the patient. It leads to better care for the patient. And I'm just, like I said, my heart is just broken that this is going to be bad for women.
And you've experienced this. You've seen this firsthand. And it is, bottom line, and I know because it approaches this, this sacred cow of the left of abortion, that they will sacrifice women just to protect what they have created as a constitutional right. And this was about the health and well-being of women.
Yep. Yeah, Tony, I lived, unfortunately and unfortunately, two hours from George Tiller's abortion clinic in Kansas. And he was infamous for people coming from across the country for his late-term abortions. And when those people are driving home, it was just not uncommon 2 hours after the procedure that's when they start bleeding and having problems. So I have had to take care of this firsthand. And it is a real problem. And we're not making, this is not a pretend problem. This is for real. Women have lots of complications from these abortions, and it would just be common sense that the person doing them be able to take care of them. And what happens is, all of a sudden, the people that are doing the abortions will have a lower standard of training, a lower level of training. They're on their way to letting, nurses do these procedures now. And because that, a nurse could never have admitting privileges in a hospital, so they're going to lower the care for the women as well. And again, it's going to lead to more complications. So this is a scary day for women across the country.
And Congressman Marshall, it also points back to the importance of the courts. And in fact, in this, there's no doubt in the very near future, we're going to see additional vacancies on the Supreme Court. And whoever has the ability to make nominations, it's going to have an impact on issues like this. If you have those coming from the left who aren't concerned about the letters in the writing of the Constitution, the original intent of the Constitution, and they're finding things in the shadows of the Constitution, we're going to move further away from the well-being of women and all of society, for that matter.
Yeah, Tony, as I think about this election coming this November, what's at stake, and one of the greatest things at stake for this country, is Supreme Court judges and federal judges. And I believe that for such a time as this, Donald Trump has been elected to be a president, and we need to get him reelected, and we need to keep the majority in the Senate as well. That's why this is so important, that this is, that Senate's the backstop, and it's going to make sure we confirm conservative, constitutionalist, pro-life judges. So I just hope America realizes, of all this noise we got going on, we have an election in November, and this is what's at stake.
So true. So true. We cannot be distracted by all of the noise out there that I think is intended to, number one, to discourage, to distract, and literally to, I think, in many ways, suppress the vote of conservatives in the fall to keep them from going and voting, because the court, the pro-life policies we've seen, so many other things are at stake. They hang in the balance. Congressman Marshall, thanks so much for joining us, and thank you for being such a passionate advocate for the sanctity of human life and the well-being of women.
Thank you so much, Tony. I just feel honored to be on the call with you. Thank you for what FRC does to continue to highlight these challenges, because most of the national news is not covering the story. Somebody has to cover it. Thanks for leading always on this issue. Thanks so much.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you. And we will continue to do so, supporting members of Congress like Roger, who are here in Washington, D.C., representing the values that the vast majority of Americans care deeply about. And we're going to continue to give them a voice as we voice your values here in our nation's capital. All right, folks, don't go away. There's a lot more Washington Watch to come. We're going to talk about the cancel culture next here on Washington Watch. Don't go away.
Do Christians have a biblical obligation to participate in government? Do Christians have a duty to vote? And if so, what principles should inform them while casting their ballots? How should pastors think about politics, and how can they shepherd their congregations well during an election season? The gospel of Jesus Christ has implications for all areas of our life, including politics. Christians must be prepared to grapple with the moral issues of our day, the reality of our two-party system, and follow our Christian convictions to their logical end by voting for candidates that support clear biblical values. Family Research Council has partnered with 21 state family policy councils for a new edition of Biblical Principles for Political Engagement. This booklet provides biblical wisdom and clear answers to pivotal questions to help you navigate the political landscape. This publication exists to facilitate careful thinking about issues and encourage God-honoring political engagement that filters all issues and candidates through a biblical worldview. To read the full publication, visit frc.org/engage.
Not so long ago, sex education in public schools involved learning about human growth and development and listening to advice on how to be careful, respect others, and save sex for marriage. Things are very different today. Parents have two main concerns about sex ed: that it sexualizes children and that it's loaded with LGBTQ indoctrination. Family Research Council has released a new resource to address this issue titled Sex Education in Public Schools: Sexualization of Children and LGBT Indoctrination. This resource reveals troubling examples of the agenda-driven content being pushed in modern sex ed and exposes the powerful organizations behind it all. Finally, it offers some action steps for parents to consider in their fight to protect the health and innocence of their children. For more information about sex education in public schools and to view this resource, visit frc.org/sexeducation. That's frc.org/sexeducation.
This is Washington Watch, and I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad you are with us. The website, TonyPerkins.com. Right after the tragic death of George Floyd, as we've talked about, protests were sparked around the world for the, quote-unquote, the sake of equality and the denouncement of police brutality. Now, no doubt, as we've talked about, there are cases of that. It needs to be dealt with, and those things need to be addressed. But unfortunately, some of the legitimate peaceful protests were hijacked, and they devolved into destruction of statues, renaming of important landmarks, really an effort to erase American history. Well, this last weekend here in D.C., Jeff Bezos, the head of Amazon, has a home here in D.C., and one of these mobs came in to that neighborhood and set up in front of his house a guillotine with this message in front of it. Actually, the flyers they were putting out: "End the abuse and profiteering, abolish the police, the prisons, and Amazon." Now, the reflections here of the French Revolution are pretty strong. I mean, the guillotine, but the messaging in the cancellation, this cancel culture that is being pushed, very, very similar. Joining me now to talk more about this is FRC's Director of Christian Ethics and Biblical Worldview, David Clawson. David, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me, Tony.
I mean, these are some troubling times. And I think as we do with all of these issues, we have to ask the question, as Christians, how do we deal with this?
Right. And we want to ask that question. We want to be thoughtful. We want to think about this well. And I think this, what we saw this weekend happening at Jeff Bezos' house, where that guillotine is set up and they're saying abolish the prisons, abolish Amazon. You know, the guillotine is a clear symbol of the French Revolution, late 18th century, that stands for mob rule, anarchy, rejection of the church, rejection of religion, and is a symbol of secularism. So I think there's no – you know, you talked about this last week on the show, Tony, but there's something more going on here than just tearing down statues. There's an ungodly worldview that really undergirds a lot of what we're seeing on the streets right now.
And just to remind folks, in the French Revolution, the first target was organized religion.
Yes.
They went after the church. And then everything that provided structure to society, police, they want to abolish the police. I mean, this is a move toward anarchy. And then this cancellation culture has everybody you're running in fear. This Nini's Deli in Chicago, Christian family owned this, and they refused to participate in the Blackout Tuesday, and so they were targeted. Their store was trashed. Now they've been basically shut down, canceled, cancel culture. There's danger on many, many different fronts. I mean, we talked about this before. I mean, America's history is best summed up as the good, bad, the ugly. Mm-hmm. But it's a process of moving toward a more perfect union to move this to a more perfect republic. So let's talk just about what we've seen happen and how, as Christians, we need to process this and how we need to respond to it. Do we need to shrink back in silence? Do we need to go into hiding? Or do we have to face the truth, speak the truth, and, you know, face the consequences of the angry mobs?
Yeah, we absolutely. You preached a wonderful chapel message this morning here for the staff at FRC and gave a call for us to be standing. You know, obviously, you and I, neither one of us, Tony, are defending every statue that's been erected in this country. You know, there's some statues that probably could and should be taken down once you go through the legal process. But, you know, what we're seeing across the country is more than just, you know, peaceful protesters trying to make a legitimate point. When you get to the point where they're tearing down statues of Abraham Lincoln, Ulysses S. Grant, defacing World War II memorials, tearing down statues that have been erected to abolitionists like we saw in Philadelphia, we see that there really is, like I said earlier, there's an ungodly worldview. And I think that was just symbolized really well this weekend, putting up that guillotine, because that really is a symbol of secularism and a shot at the church and organized religion. I think as Christians, we just need to have our eyes open, realize what's taking place, and to speak truthfully to what's taking place.
Well, if we were looking for perfect people to erect statues to commemorate, there would be no statues.
Right.
We wouldn't have them because there are no perfect people. I mean, the story of mankind is the story of fallen man and the redemption of God. And that's the story of America, and that's the story. We celebrate the good aspects of those men and women who have come before us. And to eradicate that is really I think to fall into the hands of those that want to create a utopia that just simply does not exist, it only leads to totalitarian governments and immense human suffering.
Yeah, that's very well said, Tony. You know, like you said, America is not a perfect country, but it has consistently made strides to live up to its founding ideals. And I think some of these monuments, specifically the Lincoln Monument that we talked about last week, is a reminder that America is, glory, thank God, living up to our ideals day in and day out. And we need to learn from our past, not try to erase it.
Yeah, absolutely true. And that's a part of history, is learning. But if you eradicate, if you erase, if you cancel history, what is there to learn from? You will repeat those mistakes. And again, we don't celebrate everything that everybody did, but we do celebrate the good things, the good contributions that people made. David Clawson, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Tony.
And folks, you can find out more about the work that David is doing in our Christian Ethics and Biblical Worldview Division. Go to TonyPerkins.com and you can follow the links over. All right, when we come back, we're going to take a look at Turkey. More bad news coming out of Turkey as it pertains to religious freedom. Leila Gilbert joins us next. Don't go away.
Could you use some timely and original commentary to read this summer, specifically on the issues facing our culture today? FRCblog.com has just what you're looking for. The content on our blog is written by our policy experts, members of the Family Research Council team, as well as outside contributors. You can learn about religious liberty, life, marriage, family, sexuality, public policy, and the culture. Check out this list of a few of our most recent titles. What Does It Mean to Be a Woman? DC Christians Take to the Streets to Sing, Lament, and Pray, and Prayerfully Responding to Civil Unrest. At Family Research Council, our mission is to advance faith, family, and freedom in the culture by helping you to live out your faith and stand for truth. Our blog helps you do just that. Stay informed and get the resources you need at frcblog.com. On April 16th, President Trump and the White House Coronavirus Task Force announced a three-phase plan with guidelines for how states can begin scaling back restrictions. Churches should begin putting in place plans to reopen and operate their ministries according to the guidance of the Centers for Disease Control as state officials begin lifting orders. Here at Family Research Council, we have summarized the White House three-phase plan and how it relates to in-person church meetings and gatherings. Check out our resource, What Pastors Should Know About the White House Plan to Open Up America Again. Our resource offers practical guidelines for how churches and houses of worship can begin to operate safely as our country reopens. Visit frc.org/church guidelines to view this resource and learn more. There, you'll also find our full list of resources for churches in the time of coronavirus. Again, that's frc.org/church guidelines.
Hey, Matt.
Hey, Hannah.
What's going on? Why so gloomy?
Well, I'm a little disappointed. I had a lot planned to do during the stay-at-home time, and I just didn't do it.
Oh, yeah? What did you have planned that you didn't get to do?
Well, I was actually hoping I would finally be able to get time to do a regular Bible reading routine, and I started a couple of times. I just didn't stick with it.
Don't be too down on yourself. Starting a new routine can be hard, but one way to help is to join in with others and to have a good game plan. I think I have a good solution for you.
Oh, yeah?
Tony Perkins and FRC are doing a 2-year study in the Word. They have it all mapped out.
When did they start? I would be so far behind.
Oh, that's not a problem. You can literally jump in anytime. There's a daily reading, just a couple of chapters a day, with questions to help you think about what you're reading.
Nice. Where can I find this?
Go to frc.org/Bible, and you can get started.
Where's that again?
frc.org/Bible.
Got it. Checking it out now.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, your host. The website is tonyperkins.com. If you're on social media, on the Twitter platform, it's at T Perkins. Or if you're trying out the new parlor, it's at T Perkins there as well. We've been talking from time to time. We've been focusing on Turkey, and especially since a little over a year ago when they moved into northeast Syria. Very concerned about what's happening there in northeast Syria, the religious freedom that was sprouting up. Now Turkish forces in there. And then recent attacks on the Yazidis, where we saw them in Mount Sinjar, bombing raids. And it is just they're moving not only across their borders, taking actions which have detrimental effects to religious freedom and to religious minorities, but also within their borders. Now, I've been paying obviously close attention to Turkey for the last couple of years, ever since I went to Turkey and was there for the what ended up being the final hearing for Pastor Andrew Brunson, and then accompanied him at the White House's request back to the United States. Things are getting worse. In fact, recently, the head of the Protestant churches, that's not a whole lot left, but they're in Turkey speaking out about the increased actions, negative actions that the country, the leadership of Turkey is taking against Christians. Joining me now to talk more about this is FRC Senior Fellow for International Religious Freedom, Leila Gilbert. Leila, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you. I'm very happy to be here.
What is happening in Turkey? I mean, obviously they're being aggressive across their borders, but at the same time we're seeing increased hostility to religious freedom within their borders.
Well, that's right. And we always have to come back to the fact that President Erdogan is a radical Muslim. He's an Islamist, and he has a vision to make his country an Islamist hardcore country, which he has about half the population on his side, if that. But the pandemic and the economy are terrible right now, and he's really kind of fighting for his electoral life. So he's trying to gain some traction with his followers. And like I said, these are the radicals. Whether that's working or not is another story.
Yeah. Well, Leila, many would say that, hey, it's Turkey, it's a sovereign country. Of course, they're a NATO ally. We're supposed to be a friend of ours, and they're not certainly not acting like it. But people say, well, you know, look, let them do what they want to do. And I have a tendency to say, look, it's in your borders, as long as you're not violating human rights, which, you know, the religious freedom and human rights violations go hand in hand. I do think as an international community we need to speak out on these things, much like we do in China. But Turkey and Erdogan, they're not limiting their actions to Turkey. I mean, they have tentacles literally around the globe.
That's absolutely true, and increasingly aggressive in several places that we've noted in the last couple of weeks that they have reached into Libya, which is not working so well for them, but they're trying to get something going there. They're, of course, as you said, in northeast Syria. They're in Iraq. And they're also making a lot of noise about Greece, and they're active in Israel, where they're trying to gain power in Israel with the Palestinian community there.
What's the avenue that Turkey is using to go into these other Muslim countries?
Well, military aggression in Libya, for sure. Mm-hmm. And also, they have an agenda with petroleum there that they're working very hard to limit Greece's hands in that and southern Cyprus. And so it's a combination of economic greed, I think. In terms of northern Syria, we know what they're up to there. Northern Iraq. No, I'm right. Northern Syria. Yeah. Right. And I don't understand what's going on with Sinjar. I really don't. They claim it's to come after the PKK, but they've been bombing Christians as well as Yazidis. So I really don't know what they're thinking there. It's not clear to me. But it's aggression and it's impatience on his part, I think, and also sort of a reckless attitude toward making his claim.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you along for the ride today. Leila Gilbert, my guest. She is Senior Fellow for International Religious Freedom here at the Family Research Council, focusing our conversation right now on Turkey. What's the word that's coming out from the Christian Protestant pastors there in Turkey right now? What's happening with them?
They're feeling a lot of threat. There have been some not yet deportations, but refusal to allow spouses, for example, to stay with their husbands who are pastors or Americans or some other nationality. And one particular case, they've been married for 10 years. They've had a church. They've had a pleasant time in Turkey, the best years of their life. And suddenly she is not getting her visa renewed and she has to leave. So it's things like that. There are also these threats. There's just an uncertainty ever since Pastor Brunson was mistreated. And I don't know if you read the indictment, but it was fantasy.
Oh, yeah. I listened to it being read in the courtroom, 76 pages of it. And it was quite extensive in the allegations that they fictitiously drew up to charge him with.
But that would put fear in the heart of every pastor because it was so irrational.
Yeah.
And so insane. And so I think that seeing this encroachment toward their spouses, pressure from the locals, and that happens, that comes in without him having to speak. So there are a lot of reasons that there's tension, but now it's becoming evident and it's being reported in German news and elsewhere that this is a real problem.
What's his end game?
Well, the two accusations are, one is that he wants the neo-Ottoman caliphate and he wants to be the caliph. The other is that he's just a pan-Islamist and it's a religious drive altogether. And I don't think the two are mutually exclusive.
Well, this obviously is complicating not just our relationship with Turkey, but as we pointed out earlier, they are moving into other parts of the world, making some of those relationships more complicated. What can the U.S. do to curtail the ambitions that Turkey has under Erdogan?
I think it requires a look back at what happened when we moved our troops out of northeast Syria. I think that was the beginning of this aggression, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And I think we didn't draw a line there and we didn't say no. And now we have to come back And, I mean, President Trump was wonderful about Brunson. He did all the right things there. But I think now it's time to reevaluate, reconsider the principles that we operate from. And, you know, with this new executive order, I think it's a prime time to step up to the plate and say, you know, this is going against what we represent as a nation, and maybe draw some new lines in the sand.
You know, there's folks listening right now, and of course, the United States, we have a host of issues of our own. I mean, you look at what's happened in the last 5 months, and we've got the coronavirus that has basically shut everybody up in their homes. It shut down our economy. We come out of that, we're just pulling the blinds and opening the doors, and then we have rioting in the streets. You know, we've got this the looting, and of course, there's legitimate protests mixed in with that. You know, now we're coming, people wanting to tear down statues and rewrite American history. And I mean, it's just, and then of course, we're coming up on election. It's a perfect storm. In fact, I don't recall, I mean, I don't think in my lifetime there's ever been such an unsettled, uncertain time as we're facing in the United States right now. So, and I say all that as a backdrop to, you know, we're focused here on religious freedom internationally, talking about Turkey. Earlier this week, talking about China. Why, as Christians in America, given all that's going on here, why should we even care about what's happening in Turkey, what's happening in China, what's happening in Nigeria? Why should we be concerned?
Well, partly because these are our brothers and sisters that we're mostly focused on, because we look at the Christian communities in these places as Christians. And I think that's important. And I also think we need perspective in America as to what's really bad, what's really difficult, and a close look at Nigeria and a close look at China and Turkey, but Turkey lesser.
Right.
Those two countries are absolutely so abusive, and the violence in Nigeria is beyond belief. And I think as Christians, you know, when I hear Black Lives Matter, I think of American blacks, of course, but I also think of Nigerian blacks being slaughtered in their homes. It's impossible for us to not be global in our thinking any longer. And as Christians, we have to pray for our brothers and sisters, do what we can to defend them, but we also have to realize that we have some perspective and that we have a wonderful country. And yes, it's flawed. And yes, there are crimes and sinners and all kinds of bad people like us. But there's also something here that is rare in the world. And we speak from a privileged place, being able to say, we want to help and we want to pray for you. And inside, we know we have it very, very good here, and we should be grateful.
Yeah, it's important to point out we don't claim to be a perfect country, yeah. Never have been, never will be. In fact, there's not been a perfect country since the beginning of man, because man has fallen and man fails. But human history is the story of redemption. You know, it's the story of man fallen, but then God sends a redeemer. There's the sanctification process, and it's the same thing with nations. I mean, as America, you know, we're over 200 years into this, you know, soon 250 years, and we're moving toward a more perfect union. We're not there yet. But as you pointed out, you know, we have freedoms that many in the world dare not even dream of.
That's right.
But I also think that as believers, we have a responsibility, as you pointed out, to care for, advocate for others. But I think if we fail to uphold those foundational, fundamental principles as human rights, and that's one of the things we do in international religious freedom, we recognize them not as American rights that we want to impose on other people. They're God-given rights, so they're human rights. And I think it's extremely important that we be about making that argument, because I can assure you, we're not always going to have an administration that is respectful of our First Amendment rights here in the United States. In fact, we don't have to look far back to see we had one that way. So I think the more we have these conversations and we're engaging the church in advocating for this fundamental human right of religious freedom, we actually are building a firewall or a bulwark around our freedom here at home as well.
I agree. And as Christians, we are spiritually holding back a tide. As we pray and as we support people and think of them, we're dealing with spiritual forces too.
Yeah.
And that's really the bottom line, is as believers joining together and standing up and saying, no, not just here, but anywhere. This is wrong. It's criminal. And we have to pray against it and speak out against it.
And Leela, I think the inverse is true as well, or that as we exercise our religious freedom here, we are protecting religious freedom abroad. I think you can go back to the previous administration where it was basically open season on Christians and people of faith in this country, and there was an open hostility toward religious exercise in this country. And I think that the tyrants and the terrorists took that as basically a green flag to start their engines and start the persecution of believers around the world.
I think that's absolutely true. And it still isn't necessarily clear everywhere that this is a new ballgame.
Yeah.
And that we have and it's becoming clearer with these executive orders and various statements that are made. But this is why we need to stand up and speak right now and say, you know, we can speak with our government behind us at this time.
Yeah. And that's it makes a huge difference. I know you've been in this space of international religious freedom for a long time. I've been in the last 10 years or more, have been working periodically, of course, the last 4 years pretty intently. But when you didn't have an administration working with you, you know, you had nothing, really. It was just prayer. And I shouldn't say nothing. We had prayer. And we did see God move in a number of cases where we did see people set free. But it is so much more productive when you've got an administration that is in agreement with this idea that religious freedom is a fundamental human right.
That's right. We have strong people on our side, and thank God for that today.
Well, Leela, I want to thank you for joining us and appreciate the work that you do here at the Family Research Council on behalf of international religious freedom.
Thank you, Tony.
In fact, I think you've got a piece that folks you can read at tonyperkins.com, one of the latest pieces that Leela has done. And I want to encourage you to, look, join us in praying for the persecuted, because there's something each and every one of us can do. I pray every day for the persecuted church, and this is an opportunity for churches to actually adopt either countries, families, adopt those that are living in these areas of intense persecution. It's a good way to remind your people by praying for the persecuted. I'm talking to pastors right now. It's a good way to remind your people how blessed we are in this nation and what we have to do to protect these freedoms here at home as well. Well, we're out of time. I want to thank you for joining us. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit tonyperkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.